Hello and welcome back to the Talking Leadership TV podcast series. Thank you for joining us again. Our guest today is Wendy Thorsbourne. Wendy and her husband own a grazing property, the Two Swans, in the Glenrock district of the South Burnett. She has a keen interest in all things agriculture, biosecurity, community, and advocating for rural and regional Queenslanders. She spent more than 40 years in various geographical locations and industries throughout New South Wales and Queensland. She's also been involved in numerous primary industries, including grazing, cane, grains, and horticulture, and natural resource management. Her experience provides her with an excellent understanding of the economic, environmental, and social issues facing rural and regional Australia, particularly around the areas of agriculture, natural resources, catchment management, and industry development. Wendy is constantly inspired by the resilience of rural and regional Australians and aims to use her accumulated skills, knowledge, and connections to assist groups and individuals from rural and regional Australia, and in particular Queensland. Today's podcast is going to be focused on challenges to leader development. But as always, enough from me. I'll hand over to today's guest, Wendy. Wendy, thanks for joining me today on the podcast, mate. How are you going?
Good, thanks. How are you going?
Good, good, good. Where I first want to start with this, as I should rightly say, is leaders have to engage with volatile markets and business environments. That's no new groundbreaking discovery on my part. But as a starting point, and this is a two-parter if you could, and so part one will be, can you identify some key challenges facing leaders pre-COVID-19, if I can get you to draw your mind back before the big COVID-19 hit?
I guess some of the it's always been a challenge for leadership is, I guess, working out what a leader really is and having those qualities there. I guess what I saw a lot of the challenge is that there was a lot of mix up between leadership and management. Management was often lauded as being leadership and kicking goals and everything was leadership, whereas I see a fairly distinct difference. Leadership is not about positions. Leadership is about qualities, and a lot of positions were expected to be, portraying leadership qualities when in fact they weren't necessarily the right people for the job, but they were being held up as leaders. So I've always seen that there is that crossover between management and leadership.
That came up a lot in previous discussions I've had with podcast guests around the what is the connection between leadership and management. And I'm of the belief, and this is a personal opinion, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you can have and demonstrate leadership qualities as a manager, but the management function is a very process orientated one with all those features that tend to annoy those that are led, even those that lead, around command and control and getting to KPIs and just getting to results rather than understanding the process of things and dealing with human beings. And not that you don't do that in both a leadership context and a management context, but I think that's where, for me, some of the dividing line is. And so if that is what you had as top of mind, then I would ask you, post COVID-19, if we can agree that we're in a post COVID-19 world, do you think those challenges have changed?
I think they're still there. I think people are still being rewarded and held up as leaders, whereas they're really very good at managing and very good at kicking goals and things like that. I think some of the challenges that have really come out post COVID is that, I mean, we were in a big unknown world, weren't we, when COVID hit? We didn't know what was happening. So people's priorities started to change. There's so much more working from home, and people started saying, well, what is important to me, and it's not necessarily work. So one of the big challenges, I guess, is finding talent and keeping talent as a leader or as a manager. I guess one of the challenges as a person who is working and things like that, people are starting to say, well, I'm not going to be spending my time at work if it's not something that I love doing. So they're making that choice a lot more. And I guess recognizing the cost of living squeeze and people and things like that people need to work. There's getting to be a lot more stress in the workplace, and so therefore that stress is needing to be managed. And it's not just stress in rural areas, it's stress in urban, everywhere, at all different levels of the workplace. So that is really becoming a much bigger issue than perhaps it was pre-COVID. And simply because people are trying to do more with less. There's less resources.
That response fascinates me for a number of reasons, and the bit that I'd like to talk about, if we could, is the idea in the world of work that you're doing something that you're passionate about. I think is the ideal, but not always necessarily the reality. So I'm sure anyone who's watching this podcast or listening to the audio version of it, you're thinking, yeah, I've had some pretty crappy jobs that I did just to make some dollars and make ends meet. Do you think that level of being able to achieve a, sorry, not achieve, get into a role that you're passionate about is easier in some industries than others, or is the playing field so wide in terms of opportunities for work that you can find something you can get passionate about? I'm just wondering what the process looks like. How do you find that passion, a role that gets your creative thinking going and that you have some passion for?
I guess, Eric, I've always been quite lucky. I've always been in a field that I've enjoyed doing. I guess, chosen something or gone down a path that I feel some relevance in it. And I've made a very clear choice to do that. And I guess over the time, if I wasn't feeling the passion, I've just moved to something else. Coming out to a regional area, I guess I was quite concerned that there really wouldn't be too many options out here, and we've found the exact opposite. There's just, I guess, because there is a bit of a skill shortage or a talent shortage out here, that if you have the skills that you've been able to build over the years, you're able to move into something that is really of interest. So I guess to a degree, it's about building it to work for you, your career. I guess it would be very difficult. I understand it would be very difficult starting out now and not having those skills behind you. But sadly, that's so many years ago for me, I can hardly remember
Yeah, you and me both.
it.
Yeah,
But
that
yeah, I can understand that. I can understand the need just having to do something to just simply make ends meet. But on the opposite end of that is to be able to get yourself into a position where you are able to develop that passion.
Yeah, and more luck to you and to others that have found that. I think over a career, and this is something I'd like to bring up and see what your thoughts are on, is as you move on through a career and you're gaining experience, and of course you're getting older through that process, that you build those skill sets and you build those connections to be able to open up other potential opportunities in terms of your either professional development or work opportunities that you might not have when you're younger. So I do recall in my youth, I had to do lots of other secondary jobs that weren't great, but it helped me to pay bills because the outcome for me was if I don't do these things, then what my family doesn't get the material needs that they need to kick on a day to day. So there was a driving force there, but that
That's
driving.
right. I guess, Eric, it's all about how you frame what it is that you're doing. Like
Sure.
you just said before, that was your motivation, was to get something together to build your family and to have your family comfortable. So I guess as long you're meeting those needs, and so that's the frame that you're looking at it in. And I guess when I started work, I was the same thing. I was just going through and getting whatever I could out of it. I guess I wish I really look back now. When I started work, I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew how everything was done and how could people still be doing the same thing in 30 years' time. I wish I could be starting out now with the wisdom that I've got now, starting out back then with the wisdom I have now, and looking at things so differently.
Yeah, and
It takes a long time to build that experience.
I was going to say, with age comes wisdom and experience. I mean, you've got to take a couple of knocks along the way. So I get that the challenge there is to be able to deal with it and come out the other end, surviving and doing something better. Look, let me put something to you now. There was a recent KPMG report that surveyed 400 Aussie businesses. And particularly Aussie leaders asking, what were the key challenges they were facing as business leaders last year, 2023? And what came out of that survey was that talent acquisition and retention, digital transformation and optimization, dealing with cyber risks, dealing with an evolving regulatory environment and reporting changes, and the need for greater agility and flexibility within businesses, that they were the key issues that came out. Now, I'm a little bit hesitant here to say, hey, what's your rating of those particular outcomes? Because they were what they were. But what do you see in those outcomes, and do they ring true for you? And would you add anything to that list?
Good question, Eric. I had a look at that, and I guess my first thought about it is that it's very much a focus on business. I didn't see. I went and had a look at that survey, and I thought the survey was really focused on business. It wasn't focused as much on leadership qualities per se, and what leadership is. So I guess that sort of harks back to my initial point, is that so much of what is held up as leadership and leaders are actually very good managers, and it's all about management. And that's a lot of what I saw here as well. And not taking away from the value and everything, this is great information. So I went on and I was just sort of looking around at what constitutes leadership and what's leadership. What are leadership qualities and everything? And I actually found on the internet, maybe it was the questions that I was asking, I actually found that so much of the information about leadership was really all of this management, and it was all about leadership at work. There was really not much about leadership per se outside the workplace, and it's like leadership equals workplace, workplace equals leadership. So I had to really sort of look a little bit harder to find that. And where I did sort of find it the most is where there were conversations about women in the workplace and leadership and things like that. That's where they started drawing out some of what I see of those leadership qualities. And I guess the sort of leadership qualities that I was thinking of is, what is a leader? To me, it's someone who authentic, the word that springs to mind is authenticity, being authentic, being inspiring, I guess being good at what you do, or being prepared to back yourself. It's all about developing trust around you. I think trust is a really big thing in leadership. Trust is a really big thing with leaders, and I hardly saw that mentioned at all. Whereas I think that is probably the biggest thing about a leader, is being able to develop that trust and inspiration with the people around them.
Look, I'm really happy the way you unpack that for me, because I'm trying to learn through these podcasts as well. And in looking at what sort of came out of that survey, and look, you can run any kind of survey around leadership and you'll get certain kind of responses. And what I saw in those outcomes, which don't to me seem to ring untrue about the current workplace, it's very much issues around the process of getting the organization to point
X or Z or wherever that is, and there's not a lot around the people side of things except for that talent acquisition one up the top. But that discussion around acquisition, retention, and upskilling, this is not a new challenge. This is something that's been in the world of work and outside the world of work for a long time, because you could be working for a not-for-profit in the non-corporate sector, and getting talent in, whether it's paid or volunteer, is a critical thing. But what I saw out of this survey, and something that struck me, and you struck on it as well, is if you're looking at what is a key leadership challenge, mine would be how, I'll rephrase this, to what extent is your thinking ready for the agility that you'll need in the changing world of work and the changing volatility of many industries at the moment. So, I won't say forget COVID-19, but there are other challenges that come up. It could be geopolitical, it could be market restructuring, industry restructuring. And what do you need as a leader to face those things? How do you equip your staff to be able to deal with the challenges that are coming? Is your workforce changing right in front of you, and you don't have the capability to deal with those changes as they're coming? And what comes top of mind for me is things around that work from home, the mobility of your workforce now, and other issues that come up. And yes, it wasn't touched in that survey, but yeah, it seems to me that the outcomes that these 400 Aussie leaders have indicated seem to me to be what is typical in a corporate sense. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And that was my first thought too when I was going through it. I thought, well, that's very corporate. And leadership in a corporate space is really important. Hell, that's where how we can make changes and do things. But leadership outside the workplace, I could find very little on. And in our changing world, that's just so important. And I guess one of the things that has struck me s since COVID, when COVID hit, we did everything remotely. Teams, Zoom, everything with the phone, it was all done remotely. We didn't have any face-to-face contact. And I guess once COVID finished and we were able to come back together, it was almost like it was really difficult to get people to come together.
Oh, you mean leave the Zoom sort of Teams environment? Yeah, okay. Talk to me more about that.
Well, I guess when COVID hit in our own workplace, you know, we shut the doors there on the 20th of March or whenever it was, no one knew what was going to happen. No one knew where things were at. I was working for a natural resource management group. We were doing a lot of field days, things like that, and getting people together pre-COVID was difficult enough. But if you had a reason, people would come together post-COVID. Very difficult to get people to come together. People stay in their own little community, in their own little neighbourhood, and it became really hard to draw people outside those much smaller, close-knit groups that they were in. So that becomes a challenge, I guess, for leaders, for organisations, anything like that that relies on face-to-face connections.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating to me. Sorry to interrupt before I forget this thought, that I've been hearing mixed views on that. So some of my colleagues in the corporate space have said to me, "Look, we can't wait," and have pushed to get more face-to-face meetings, to move away from the Zoom, Teams environment, whatever your program of choice is. And then there are others that say people want and value that time to be flexible and to be able to meet in ways that suit them, not necessarily suit the organization. And what I was going to ask you before I forget is, do you think there's a rural regional divide there, or is that across the board from your experience that it didn't matter whether you were working in a regional setting or an urban setting, that that pull to get people back in to do face to face is just a more difficult post-COVID?
Probably I've had more in the regional settings than I have, Eric, in the urban settings. I guess Zoom and Teams and things like that gave us an ex a reason to not have to spend hours traveling. And in a lot of work situations, it's just the go-to now. Whereas before, we might have had to travel 3 hours to a meeting or 2 hours to a meeting and then try and do something else while you're at the office to make it worthwhile and then spend another 2 hours coming home. It doesn't happen that often anymore. You just have a quick Zoom meeting and that's it. And you miss that connection with everybody else that you may have had before. My office used to be 2.5 hours away over at Bundaberg. So to have a meeting over there, you'd go over early in the morning, spend the day there doing all sorts of other projects, have your meeting, and then come home. But you'd make lots of connections while you're there, and there'd be lots of project overlaps and everything that would happen while you're there. Well, that doesn't happen so much now. You do your meeting online, you might talk to somebody on the phone before or after. You contact them when you have to now. Yeah. More
Yeah.
so than just relying on that opportunistic
Yeah,
meetings that you used to have before.
100%. I think that ability to get out and meet some new people or meet the people that you have to conduct your business, that other things come up or other opportunities to have chats come up in a one-on-one setting that I've been told that doesn't seem to be as present in a Zoom type context because it's a very limited amount of people. You're not face to face, but you get all those other benefits for it not happening. That's very interesting. So just as a final topic area of discussion, Wendy, what tips, tools, tricks can you give to the leaders that are listening to this discussion to help them potentially engage with the challenge they might be facing? And we'll keep it as broad as you'd like.
I guess probably the biggest thing is to be able to connect with people, whether that be on an issues basis or personally, whatever. But it's being able to form that connection. I guess that paves the way for being able to be a leader to them, to be inspirational. I guess myself, if I feel I'm not connecting with a person or I don't have anything in common with them, it's quite easy to walk away from it. But if I'm feeling that I've got something in common with them and that I can potentially, I guess, be thinking along the same sorts of lines as that person, I'm more likely to go down that same direction with them. I guess it's all about, as a leader, it's taking people on that journey with you. So it's being quite clear about what the vision is and being able to have people see themselves in that vision as well. Because if you see yourself going there or if you're wanting to feel part of it, you'll be far more motivated to go there, or to actually be a part of that, if you're connected with it. And I guess as a leader, something else that really sort of always, I guess, I connect with is as a leader to be vulnerable. You don't need to be the very best at something. You don't need to put on that mask that says, hey, I'm really good at this, just come with me. But just be vulnerable and be open about when things, where you are at with things. And once you're vulnerable, people are more likely, again, to connect with you. You're not setting yourself above anyone. I've always thought that's a really important thing with leaders. I remember working with someone once as my leader. We were doing something, and she said to me, "Well, I can't remember what the project was, but she said, I'm not doing that. I'm not paid to do that. You do that." And to me, that was just an automatic, that's it. You're putting some separation between yourself and me, and that's just an auto not working thing for me. I guess some of the other things that I've seen over time is to, it's really important to know yourself, to know what your triggers are, and to know what your motivators are. And just as important as knowing yourself is being able to know other people. So by knowing yourself and knowing other people, you're knowing how you can work with others, and you're knowing what motivates other people, what inspires other people. I think that's a really important thing. And I guess another tip or trick, your words, is really a leader is not about building themselves. A leader is about coaching or mentoring others and building others around them. Again, it's not putting that distance between yourself and other people, but it's really building other people up. It's not so much becoming irrelevant, but it's building the importance of others around you, so you're able to work together. So I guess collaboration is such a big part of it. But there's different styles of leadership. I mean, there might be a disaster. You've got to get everyone out of a burning building, and it's like, this is the way, this is how you do it now. That's not going to work in organisational change. In organisational change or any change, you need to work with people and be building other people up, and really looking at what works for them and how you can build that into your strategy. Not going to happen in a burning building out now.
You'd want that set process. This is the way out. No, I
But
can
that
agree.
set process isn't going to work in whole of organisation change or whole of region change.
Yeah, I
Is it?
agreed. Look, it's interesting in that response, and I appreciate your thinking here that all of those areas you mentioned, so communication, this is around leadership, obviously, communication, authenticity, knowing of self, getting to know others, mentoring, coaching, and that idea of networking, we could have a whole many hours
And
on.
having that vision
The
and
bit.
being true to that vision.
Yeah, and you mentioned that at the start of the discussion. These are all people focused things. They're not process focused things. And again, it went back to that survey, and I'm not having a crack at KPMG here because it's the nature of how you phrase a question, obviously, and for legal reasons, go KPMG. But what I was going to say is, it's interesting in this mix that it's about how you engage with the people that you lead. And you mentioned this in part of the response that putting up a barrier saying, this is my job, that's your job, that is poison in most workplaces, because if people can get the sense that you can get your hands dirty and that you're not above the pack, but you're trying to help steer what's going on, and yeah, you'll stuff things up occasionally and you're happy to wear that makes for better leadership. And I think we've all had the experience of being around leaders that do this well. The ones that don't do this well, those are narcissistic men and women, men and women that are in the workforce, that they're the ones that sort of stuff things up along this process of trying to deal with these challenges. Look, Wendy, this was an interesting conversation, and I do want to end asking you one last thing, if you're okay with that. That going forward in 2024, if you had to pick the one key challenge facing leaders in this year, what would that be?
I'd nearly say inspiring others. And I guess the reason I say that, Eric, is that we've all been through a pretty, and hand in hand with inspiration, I guess, is trust and respect and things. We've all been through a pretty hectic time, I guess, and a bit of we've all been through the unknown. I guess I read a quote somewhere, and it was, if you can't trust people in the known, how can you trust them in the unknown? And I think pre-COVID, it was, we were cruising along okay. Post-COVID, there's a lot of unknowns. We're not sure where, we're not so sure anymore. So it really comes back to me. If you can't trust people in the known, how can you trust them in the unknown? How can you be inspirational, or how can you inspire other people in this post-COVID world when we seem to have just lost so much trust in each other? And I see a lot of respect being lost just through actions or inaction or just the way we treat other people, that there doesn't seem to be as much respect for people now. So it's really breaking through that barrier.
Yeah, thank you, Wendy. I appreciate that as a final thought. Wendy, thank you for your time today, mate. This has been great.
It's okay. Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us. That concludes this podcast, which was focused on challenges to leader development. I'd like to thank you for joining us, but more importantly, I'd like to thank today's guest, Wendy, for sharing her insights into the topic area. As always, thanks for joining us. And just a bit of news in terms of where the podcast will now drop in the future. I've decided to publish all of the podcasts from this episode onwards onto the Talking Leadership TV LinkedIn page only. I hope you'll join us there. I'll put more information onto my personal LinkedIn channel. As always, thank you for joining me. Thank you for supporting what I'm doing, and have a great day, rest of your week. And we'll catch everyone on the next episode of Talking Leadership TV.